Welcome to my Soul Series. Soul Series is part of Oprah and Friends, exclusively on XM Radio Channel 156. And you can listen to the entire Soul Series collection on xmradio.com/Oprah. It's uplifting, enlightening, truly powerful. Welcome to Soul Series. Welcome to our Soul Series. Once again, Dr. Jill Volte Taylor is here. Dr. Jill Volte Taylor is a living, breathing example of being able to experience the power of now. She did it, unfortunately, through a massive stroke that happened to her in 1996. It took about 8 years for her to recover, but she's written a book called My Stroke of Insight because she remained cognizant the whole time, conscious of what was happening to her as the left hemisphere really deteriorated. She lost her left mind, but the right part of the brain remained. And we've been having some very fascinating conversations. But I'm telling you, you can read this book in one session and you'll want to pass it on to your friends. I've already gotten 10 copies and given to my friends because mine's all marked up. I don't want them reading my... It's a thing. I wonder, is it my ego that doesn't like to loan books? But anyway, you represent exactly what we've been learning in A New Earth about letting go of our ego. You let go of yours. Did yours return after the stroke, the ego?
No, she never really did. Not
you
that
call
one.
Her a she.
Yeah, she was different than the one that I have now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to me, people say, you know, can you go back to that space? And it's like, I'm always in that space of where I went. Mm-hmm. I had a whole mind. I lost half of my mind. And then I had another whole mind, but it was only in the right hemisphere. But I was still a whole person. And then in the recovery process, I gained those skills, but I still retained what I had been before. So I am now who this round two person instead of the first time around.
Right. Yeah. So it is our left hemisphere, for which you had the stroke in,
yep,
that causes us to have the judgments,
mm-hmm,
and the fear.
Mm-hmm.
So the reason this all happened to you and you were not afraid during the whole process,
mm-hmm,
is because that part of your brain had also gone, was hemorrhaging.
Yeah.
And the reason why you had no judgment of yourself or other people, because that part of it's gone.
Exactly. So I was perfect and whole and beautiful just the way I was, even though I couldn't walk, talk, read, write, and had no recollection of my life and drooled.
Did it change the way you now see other people who are disabled?
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. When I look at people, I don't see them as disabled. I see them as different. Because they have lost something, some ability, that is no longer inhibiting something else. So now I look at them with curiosity about what have they gained.
That is amazing.
Yeah. Yeah.
That
it's just a different way of perceiving people.
Did you keep many of the old friends?
I did. You know, I was very fortunate that people who love me for who I am. And my whole environment shifted, though, because I was in Boston and in the Harvard system when,
mm-hmm,
the hemorrhage happened. And so I had that flock of friends. But I had come from Indiana, and I still had that flock of friends. And so,
mm-hmm,
then when I came back to Indiana, that flock of friends I still had. So, yeah, I didn't lose friends over it.
Was this difficult for any of the transition, different from any of your friends? Because they had to learn a new you.
You know, it's been very interesting because many of my friends will say, I'm just the same as I was. And I look at them and think, well, maybe on the outside in, that may be true because I walk the same, I talk the same.
Mm-hmm.
I've gone back to enjoying brains again, so my interests are the same. But I'm very different. My intention is very different in how I live my life and what I'm here for now and
how
I want to spend my time. Oh, before I was ego. I was climbing the Harvard ladder. I was winning the awards and I was doing my work, and oh, it was so important, and I was so important, and it was all, you know, so important. And then when I lost that, I really became much more aware of I am in relationship to all these other people on the planet, and what I was doing was important, but other people can do that. My focus now is more with more compassion, trying to help us recognize that we are more whole human beings and that we are connected to one another. And so my interest, I may still do research, but it's not going to be in a lab with a microscope hidden away somewhere with information that's going to go into journals and ultimately maybe influence people like my brother, it's going to be much more hands-on humanitarian.
Your brother who was schizophrenic, who led you to...
Right, to studying the brain in the first place.
In the first place.
Yeah.
And so you found, through the stroke, this moment of inner peace.
Yeah.
And you say, I've learned so much from the experience with the stroke that I actually feel fortunate to have taken this journey. Mm-hmm. Thanks to this trauma, I've had the chance to witness firsthand a few things about my brain that otherwise I would never have imagined to be true. One of the things that you found was a sense of inner peace and wanted to hold on to that inner peace. Was it hard to, because you describe in the beginning of the book and in the beginning of our talks here, you described this place of nirvana. Mm-hmm. And even today I had a little, had an epiphany during the process of talking to you when I realized, even more so than reading the book, what that must have been like mm-hmm. when you have no identity mm-hmm. other than I am life.
Right.
I am life and a part of all of
innocence,
life.
Pure innocence and beauty. It's a purification. It was just beautiful. Yeah.
Have you been able to still maintain a sense of that so that you can celebrate that daily?
All the time.
Wouldn't that be amazing if we all could tap into that without having to have a stroke to do it?
Exactly. And I believe 100% that anybody can. I think it's that attitude of gratitude. You know what it feels like inside of your body when you're feeling grateful? You're just feeling the celebration of life and oh my gosh, how fortunate it is for me to be on the planet, to have this form, and who knows what the future is going to bring, and who knows what the past has brought. It doesn't matter. All I have is right now, and I'm celebrative, that gratitude. And that, to me, is the power of now. That is that experience of being in the present moment, saying, whatever this is what's important. And I can see energy radiating life, and who knows what tomorrow will bring, but it doesn't matter.
Well, one of the reasons why I wanted to talk to Dr. Jill Bolte Taylor is because in studying A New Earth and talking about Eckhart's book, Power of Now, one of the things that is so emphasized is that the only moment that really matters is now.
Exactly.
And what that stroke experience did mm-hmm. for you is it shut out all the other moments except the moment you were in.
Exactly.
The now.
Exactly. Yeah. And it was fascinating because for me, and what does that really mean? What does it feel like to be in the now? It was, in this moment, I could be here and I could have this experience, but as soon as I turned my back, you wouldn't exist anymore. You're gone. You might be a fleeting memory, but you're gone. And you have to have that left hemisphere in order to attach this moment to the next moment to the last moment.
I see.
I didn't have that linearity of those moments all lined up in a row, I didn't have my past and all of the stuff that goes with those memories.
And what happened yesterday is yesterday.
That's right.
That's why you were sitting on the sofa grinning all the time.
Exactly. It didn't matter because this was a glorious experience.
Yeah. Because you were a scientist, observing this from a scientist's mind, have other scientists, learned from your insights?
You know, it's interesting. All of the science that has happened is documented mm-hmm. mostly from the 70s.
Right.
Because in the 70s, there was this huge right hemisphere, left hemisphere wave, and it was, are you more, and we would test our children, and are you more right hemisphere, and if mm-hmm. so, you'll do these things, et cetera. And I always had this argument, though, that we have two hemispheres. And so if you look at me and you tell me I'm right hemisphere, then I need you to help me develop my left hemisphere instead of just put me on a right hemisphere path and let those things blossom, and vice versa. If I'm extremely left-hemisphered and methodical and linear and detail-oriented, give me some of the bigger picture.
Right.
Help me develop my whole brain. So when you look at the research that's been done, the science is all the same. It's just that now there comes a woman who had an experience, who it happens to be her area of expertise, where she lost the left hemisphere, had this right hemisphere experience, and can tell you what it feels like from a personal perspective. So the science, nothing's changed. Everything's documentable. It's just that I had this experience.
That you had this experience.
Yeah.
How can we manifest some of this for ourselves without having to go through a stroke? ease the chatter in our mind.
Pay attention to your thoughts.
Pay attention to your thoughts.
Pay attention to your thoughts.
Yeah. Do you meditate?
No, I don't need to.
You don't need to?
No. No, I know that my brain chatter is just a tiny little group of cells about the size of a peanut, chatter, 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 chatter. Well, when you look at the whole rest of you and the rest of me wants peace, it's like I can just say, let's not listen to that and let's come and really tune in to the present moment. One thing I think people have to be interested and willing to come to the present moment, which means you have to allow yourself the willingness to say, I'm going to set myself aside. I'm going to set my ego aside and her life, and she's not going anywhere. I'm just not going to focus on that right now.
Yeah.
She's not going anywhere. I can go back in a moment or in 5 moments or an hour later, and I can pick up right where I left off.
Well, I think what is so miraculous about what happened to you in relation to what we've been talking about with A New Earth is that in an instant, everything from your past is wiped out.
Yep.
And how you define yourself is gone.
Right.
And you are left with this clean slate. And it all was just in your mind.
Exactly.
It was just in your mind.
Yeah. It's just neurons.
It's just neurons. It's just in your mind.
Yeah, it really
had no power.
Had no power whatsoever. Had no power. And then I had the opportunity to choose, is this circuitry, are these things I want to think about? Do I like the way these feel in my body? Do I like what this is attracting to my life or not? And it was that simple for me. If I didn't like the way anger felt inside of my body because I could feel it physiologically running inside of me or not. It was a choice. It's just circuitry. I mean, you know, you look at yourself and you think, oh, okay, here I am. I've got this ego. I've got this identity. I've got this stuff. And this is who I am. It's like, no, that's not who you are. You're a bunch of cells in there. And all we have to do is wipe out a tiny little group of cells and you don't remember any of that. Are you still you?
You're still you.
You're still you, but you're not caught up in all the stuff, all the details, all the data. The data doesn't matter. And I think that people recognize this when they have trauma and they become severely ill.
Yes.
They realize that those details, those aren't the details that matter. What matters is how did I treat people? You know, when I die, what is left behind is the memory of me. How will people remember me? Was I kind? Was I loving? What I do in kindness is what matters. Yeah, it's just a different perception.
Now, did you come to some conclusion about then what happens when we die?
Well, no, not really, because I didn't die.
Mm-hmm.
I just came to a conclusion about when the left hemisphere gets shut down, what am I left with? And I found my deep inner peace, and I found beauty and purification and innocence, and it was just beautiful there.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't die, so no, I don't know past that.
Yeah.
I can't speak to that, Oprah.
Do you care?
No, that's not significant to me until I get there.
Till you get there.
But I can tell you that in my heart, I believe it's peaceful.
It's peaceful.
Because it's the absence of all that is out here, which is kind of that neurosis of that left hemisphere creating all this busy details, all this information in the external world that isn't going to matter anymore.
It doesn't matter anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You say it's also so quiet, so important to pay attention to self-talk.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
Self-talk.
Oh,
yeah.
Pay attention to what you're saying to yourself and take some responsibility for that voice. I mean, yeah,
right.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, I'm not going...
Because that's all it is. It's just talk.
It's just talk. And did you ever wonder when you're mad, really mad and you're yelling at yourself, did you ever wonder who's doing the yelling and who you're yelling at?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's the left hemisphere brain chatter yelling at that right hemisphere, which isn't always doing things absolutely to the detail that left hemisphere would like because it doesn't care about any of that stuff.
Uh-huh. But what else is what, you know, that's your way of, that's your languaging. I think
yeah.
Eckhart would say... is that it's the left hemisphere, which is the ego,
mm-hmm.
and the right hemisphere is that sense of presence
exactly.
or consciousness.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The level of awareness mm-hmm. is what he
right.
what he speaks of.
Wow.
One of the things I wanted to talk about is when you were in this state in the hospital, you talked about in the end of the book 40 things you needed most, and I was struck by, and I'd mentioned this earlier in an earlier talk that we had, that you wanted people to know, I am wounded,
mm-hmm.
I am not stupid.
Yes.
Please respect me.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Totally different perspective when people recognize you are just wounded and you will come through this, and we will bring you energy, and we will bring you whatever you need in order to help aid you, as opposed to looking at you as you're now stupid because you don't know what 1 + 1 is.
Repeat yourself, assume I know nothing, and start from the beginning over and over.
That's right.
Be as patient with me the 20th time you teach me something as you were the first.
Absolutely.
Approach me with an open heart and slow your energy down.
Slow way down. It's
Take
not about
your
busy,
time.
Busy. Take your time with me. Come and love me. Just come and be with me. Bring your positive energy and connect with me.
Be aware of what your body language and facial expressions are communicating to me.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because I may not understand your language, but boy, am I tuned into other things. Again, what did I gain? I gained perception of body language. I could read a book about you that because I was no longer distracted by what you said.
When you say I could read a book about me, mm-hmm. read a book about you, meaning a person could walk into the room and based on the energy that
right.
they brought into that
right.
room, you knew everything about them.
I had a physician walk in into the room, and it was right after surgery, and he stood in my darkened area, so I could not see him well. He turned his body, practically had his back to me when he was talking to my mother, not to me, and he was so unavailable for me. Oh, I read that. Absolutely. I read that. Would I call that particular individual in being a good doctor at that moment? No. Absolutely.
No.
Yeah.
So your sense of sensory perception was so much heightened.
Totally.
Totally heightened.
Yeah.
Make eye contact with me because I'm in here. Come find me.
Come find
Encourage me.
Exactly.
Please don't raise your voice. I'm not
but
deaf.
I'm
wounded.
Not, yes. Yeah. And so many people will assume that if I can't understand them, then they're going to yell a little bit louder. But that just scares me away because I don't need you. I need you to come closely and enunciate clearly for me.
Touch me appropriately and connect with me.
Yeah. Touch my arm. Stroke me. Stroke my hair. Come in and just comb my hair for a little while. Just love on me. Just come in and be with me.
Ask me questions with specific answers. Allow me time to hunt for the answers.
Allow me time because I have my mind is wounded. I have slowed way down in my ability to communicate. Be patient with me. Don't finish all of my sentences for me either because I need to be able to go through that hunt and process. And if you ask a question and then answer it yourself, I'm left out of the loop. And I learned that you don't really care to get any information from me, so I stop trying.
Wow.
Yeah.
Handle me gently as you would a newborn.
Yes. Treat me with that love, with that reverence and that love.
Speak to me directly, not to me, not about me to others.
Right. I'm here. Treat me with that respect. I'm your patient. Include the others around you, but your attention comes to me.
Cheer me on.
Cheer me on. Be my head cheerleaders. I needed cheerleaders all over. Cheer me on.
Expect me to recover completely, even if it takes 20 years.
Even if it takes 20 years.
How important is that?
Oh, it was so important. People would come in, and the people who said, "You're Jill, you're going to be just fine. You're Jill, you're going to be just fine." That was priceless to me because they brought me that positive energy and that belief, and it didn't matter. I'm not on a timetable. It doesn't matter that I can't do any of
these
things.
Not on a timetable, and certainly not on your timetable.
Certainly not on your timetable.
Mm-hmm.
That's right.
So what can brain science teach us about ourselves to help us cope when there's all this brain chatter going on?
Well, again, I think it's going to be where do you focus your attention? Where do you focus your attention? And pay attention to how things feel in your body. And I'm just going to keep going back to that because you know what you feel like in your body when you get angry. And you have a choice when you get angry of either being angry or of paying attention to what it feels like in your body when you are angry. And when you have that kind of a physiological response, when you get angry, it only takes 90 seconds. It takes 90 seconds from the moment that you feel that trigger happen and you feel yourself starting to get angry for the chemicals to flush through your body and then flush completely out of you. 90 seconds is all. So if you start feeling, next time, Oprah, next time you start feeling yourself getting angry, I want you to look at your watch.
And start timing it.
And start timing it. Within 90 seconds, it will be gone. And you'll go, okay, I just dodged that one.
Really?
Yeah.
So 90 seconds. So then why do people harbor the same feelings
because
for years.
They keep rethinking the same thought that re-stimulates that emotional circuitry, and they rerun the loop.
Got it.
And so you might not think about a person for 20 years, but that person comes back into your mind and you have this set thought pattern that goes in association with that person. Oh, they done me wrong. And they haven't done me wrong for 20 years, but it's all I'm thinking about. I think of that person, they done me wrong, and I hook right back into that hostility and I'm going to run it again. And I can stay angry. People can stay angry for days and weeks and years. It's phenomenal. Just because they're choosing, either consciously or unconsciously, they're choosing to rerun the loops, the circuitry.
So what purpose does that? You talked about the little pea that's the size of a
peanut
in our brain
that
holds all of those memories and thoughts.
Yeah.
What purpose does it serve?
Well, what's it there for? The storyteller is a very important part of our brain, because when you look out into the world, what the storyteller does is it takes this piece of information, that piece of information, and then starts weaving possibilities, all of the what ifs. And you want to know what your what if possibilities are in the world, because that way it allows you to move freely into your future, into the world to be able to create. But at the same time, it can wreak havoc on you emotionally.
What would happen if you surgically removed it?
You wouldn't have any language. That would be an issue.
Got it.
You have to have the language. It's the price we pay. It's one of the prices we pay. The ego is one of the prices we pay for language.
For language.
The storyteller is one of the prices we pay for language. It's all part of the very complex structure in our brains of what language brings us.
But now that you've seen it so clearly, being able to view it predominantly from the right hemisphere of your brain, you now know that you can pick and choose whenever you want.
Yeah.
And that we all have the ability to do the same.
We all have that ability. You have the ability to focus your mind on whatever you want to focus it on. And if you got loops, if you're running loops obsessively in your mind that you don't want to think about, then give your mind something else to think about. That's how easy it is. You have the ability to refocus your mind. And you can only really think one thought at a time. So you get to have some say in what's actually going on.
There was a friend of yours, I love that too, Dr. Jerry Jessup, who said that peace is the place where we should begin, not the place where we're trying to achieve.
Exactly.
What does that mean to you?
To me, that means stem from the consciousness of the intention of the right hemisphere. Who is that right hemisphere piece of me? She is connected to all that is. She's a member of a human family. She's about nurturing our relationship with one another and our relationship for the thriving ability of the planet. So it's that right hemisphere consciousness. Come into the world with the intention from that heartfelt position, that awareness, and then use the tools of the left hemisphere in order to be productive and to create in the external world.
So do you think that you've been following us with Eckhart? Mm-hmm. Do you think the new earth is a place to begin?
I think it's a wonderful place. I have been so enthusiastically supportive of what you guys are doing, because I mean, the number one message on day one is pay attention to your thoughts. You're not your thoughts. And from a brain perspective, that is so absolutely true. The left hemisphere has this little group of cells, and so many of us have decided that that is who we are. And that's only because we have not been taught as children that we have these other options.
Do you think it's easy to teach this to children?
I think so.
Yeah.
Because they're like that. Children are happy and they're in the present. And then we put them in school and we really educate their left hemisphere. And then then we start rewarding the left hemisphere personality for its achievement. So some of them become very, very good at those details. So if you're struggling to find your own deep inner peace, commend yourself. What that means is that you did a great job in school developing your left hemisphere and its abilities. But that's not the only thing that's going on inside of your head. And you do have the ability to utilize any of your systems, utilize your sensory systems, give yourself fragrance of certain smells that you love and come to the present moment. Have that sensory experience. Use your muscles, squeeze your muscles, think about it consciously, bring yourself to the present moment. Use the normal anatomy of what you are as a living being in order to stimulate you and bring you back to the present moment.
I remember years ago reading in the article from O Magazine where you said you hold your own hand at night. Sometimes you squeeze your own hand at night.
I do.
To remind you.
I still do. I hold my hand at night, wrap around the pillow, and I say thank you. I say thank you for this life. Thank you for this life. These cells, without these cells, I wouldn't be here. And so it is my absolute intention and obligation to them to pay attention to their well-being. And I ask them to heal me. I ask them to heal me. I'm going
to
be asleep.
Do you pray to God? Do you pray to God? Or do you call it God?
I don't call it God. I don't label it. As Eckhart would say, I don't label it. I just am it, and I value and celebrate whatever it is. So I'm not attached to the language. Mm-hmm. The same thing as people ask me, are you religious? And it's like, to me, religious is the story. It's the labeling of
That's
what
right.
people use in order to get to
this
it,
feeling
to
that
this
you
feeling.
Have. Yeah.
And I don't have to go through the story, but yeah. I honor the stories. I don't care what your story is, as long as it gets you to the same place of love and peace and compassion.
Well, they call you the singing scientist,
yes.
and I see that guitar. Can you demonstrate for us why you're the singing scientist?
Yeah, it's it'll take about 60 seconds, but I sing for brains.
You sing for brains.
I sing for brains. There's a shortage of brains donated for research,
mm-hmm.
and so I'd go out and I'd talk to audiences, and they'd freak out a little. This woman wants my brain.
Yeah.
So I wrote the Brain Bank Jingle.
And here we go with the Brain Bank Jingle, ladies and gentlemen.
I am a brain banker, yes. Banking brains is what I do. Oh, I am a brain banker, asking for a deposit from you. Don't worry, I'm in no hurry. Have you considered the contribution you can make when you are heaven bound? Your brain can hang around to help humanity. Find the key to unlock this thing we call insanity. Just dial 1-800-BRAIN-BANK for information, please. Educate, then donate. It's free. Oh, I am me, brain banker. Yes, banking brains is what I do. Oh, I am me, brain banker, asking for a deposit from you.
Call 1-800-BRAIN-BANK.
Beautiful.
Oh, my goodness.
It's what I do.
Yes.
It's what I do.
And because of that song going around for NAMI, you have gotten substantial contributions.
Yeah.
People but we donating need more. Brains. You need more brains.
Yeah. Scientists could utilize 100 brains a year from the psychiatric diagnosed population. And currently, before I started singing, we were getting 2 or 3 a year.
Wow.
And now we're getting 25 to 35 a year, but we could use 100.
Oh, I think that number is going to go up for
Excellent.
You.
Excellent. Thank you.
So
Oprah.
You want just from psychologically diagnosed?
Anybody. Yeah. Anybody. Psychologically diagnosed or any family member of those individuals, as well as normal control. There's a shortage of normal control donated as well.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, it has been a joy being able to share this time with you all of the... I'm glad you had a stroke of insight.
Thank you.
Yes, I'm glad you had a stroke of insight.
Yeah, no, if I could go back that day and not do it again, I would say no. If I could be born, wake up that morning and say, no, I'm not going to have that. I would have it. I would choose to have it. I have learned so much. I have grown so much as a human being, and I just really feel like I have identified my purpose.
And the purpose is?
To help other people recognize that they, too, have deep inner peace right there in the right hemisphere.
Wow.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Dr. Jill Bolte Taylor, stroke triumphant.
Stroke triumphant. nice.
Thanks, everybody, for joining us. Yeah. I'm hoping that we all learn from your experience,
Thank
that
you.
We all gain our own strokes of insight from
Thank
it.
You.
Thank you again. Thanks for joining us here on XM156, on the web, on the radio show, on the TV show, on our multi-platforms, wherever we are. Thanks, everybody. I hope you enjoyed this edition of our Soul Series. These are some of my favorite conversations.
To hear more, sign up for a free 30-day XM Radio trial by going to www.xmradio.com/Oprah.